Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to the Neil Baker Psychic Hour. I'm Kristen. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning.
Welcome to our callers and listeners. Glad to have you here today. We're continuing our discussion on the spiritual eye versus the psychic eye today, and of course, taking your calls for readings on the air. We are going to be getting to your calls at about 15 minutes after 10 or 1 or 12, depending on what time zone you're in. But first, we want to invite you to join us on Facebook and on Twitter. Those accounts are linked under our profile, the Neil Baker Psychic Hour, right here on Blog Talk Radio. And, of course, you can follow us here to reach Neil directly, 562-596-7818. And let's start, Neil.
Okay.
A couple minutes late today. So the spiritual eye versus the psychic eye. We were kind of giving an overview on Friday about the difference between perceiving spirits with third eye and perceiving, getting psychic information. So the range of planetary psychicness and beyond the earth perception, which obviously requires an opening of the third eye first on a basic level.
Yeah, opening up the third eye on the basic level. Well, the third eye being opened is one step, but where the third eye goes and how you operate it and what you alluded to is the second step. So we have everybody from opening up their third eye and worshiping the devil or darker spirits to people who just open up their third eye to the light, the cosmos, people who open up their third eye to angels or guides, people who open up their third eye specifically to God. And so you have these different levels. And of course, it's determined by your own, the person's own attitude and interpretation of what each of those levels mean, aside from their integrity, what their purpose is, and that kind of thing.
Right, because there are many people that talk about seeing visions as young children and maybe start to get into psychic readings and things like that as a profession or as a hobby, but then the interpretation is not there. So the interpretation of what they're saying is lax. So refining that, obviously you need a good guide.
Well, you need a good guide. And there's even a debate about signs and wonders and what you're looking at with the third eye. In one respect, seeing visions and having revelations can be very, very positive and powerful. On another level, it can mean nothing. So what? You can't rely on those things. And sometimes it's downright dark and misleading. So you have to kind of first subscribe to the element of enlightenment. How well is your third eye enlightened? And to what degree is your level of consciousness about the universe, about the spirit, about God? Well, so when you open up that third eye, it's sort of aimed towards the direction of your outlook. And so there are people out there who are very effective with their third eye, but they're dark. And they not only go about looking at the world in darkness, but they go about looking at the world through their ego. So there's nothing that impressive about being psychic. What's impressive is the ultimate message you get. And this transcends the idea of those that would say, well, you're just deluded. You know, you, you're you just think you know the light, or you know this, or you know that, but in all absolute realization, you're not really attaining to the higher aspect of what, of who or what God is, and connecting it to that, because there's four warnings about being psychic is not necessarily
a divine gift.
No, it's not. That's the word, divine. Divine, then, of course, you know, how do we measure our degree of foresight? Pastors, priests, rabbis have some form of foresight and seeming to be a bridge to God. But to what degree do we have that inspiration to where we certain individuals are really gifted with foresight or sight of seeing into the future or talking to spirits on the other side? There's blanket statements that's wrong. You don't speak to the dead. You don't try to contact entities from the other side. It's all occult. But that's kind of debatable, because some of our great spiritual leaders have talked or seen visions or said things that might seem to be anti-biblical, if you look at it in that respect. So I think it's hard to judge that. I think in the long run, you know, that whatever a person's seeing in their divine sight is going to be up to them and their maker. So it's hard to judge. But one form of judgment is how accurate you are. And then there's a degree of ambiguity, because not only God can be directly related to an outcome. You know, it's not up to an individual just because they have sight. That they can guarantee an outcome. But if you're connected to something higher, well, there's all kinds of contingencies, because we get into the world of how much karma is there in the involvement of the third eye.
Right. That's what I was going to say. And that can actually, I mean, the ego or karma can prevent an active third eye opening. I mean, it's more difficult for some people to activate the third eye because of those factors. And then people may have a more open third eye, but it's influenced by karma or their ego. And so that's going to be leading them to information that may not be so accurate.
Well, that's true. I mean, one's intuition or the activation of one's third eye, first of all, it's connected to the history of that third eye, meaning the history of
the soul.
And how the soul has walked through the planet or walked through the astral realm and has collected enough viable information that it's attainable or accessible to the individual while they're having a revelation or a vision.
I see. So the soul is going to provide insight. The soul's experiences will provide insight to the person using the third eye.
You know, we talk about old, even the word old soul.
Well, aren't we all old souls?
You know, aren't we all? Oh, he's an old soul. What that really implies is that the soul has gathered enough wisdom throughout the ages of its journeys that now in this particular lifetime, they extend that wisdom to others. And that's what's considered an old wisdom, the old soul wisdom attitude. But we're basically, a lot of us come back, if you ascribe to the idea that we do come back, and we're hard-headed. We never learn our lessons. And so we go through life always faced with the same dilemma. I was talking to a client today that is beset with financial problems, and they can't get quite over their financial difficulties, and they have a family to take care of. I mean, what is the karma that's involved with people who mean well, who are law-abiding, who follow certain spiritual paths, and yet they're lacking the vision to see where they need to go, so they employ or they connect to people who seem to see things, and still there's problems. Well, I think there's a great degree of karma within the element of the third eye, and that the only real bridge to the third eye, aside from visions, is through faith. I think faith and belief are very high qualities of the third eye, and the ability to understand the language of the spirit. I think those are very important things. So when we get to the degree of the spiritual eye, the karmic eye, the transcendent eye, the third eye, all these different levels, it's the advancement of energy and how we actually connect to that vision and what we put into that vision, just like what we put into life. You know, we all have lives, but to certain degrees, some of us are better than others. Not everyone's created equal. That's not true. We're all created with maybe not even an equal breath. Some of us come into the world struggling for breath.
That's true.
So we're not all created equal. It's a nice premise. It's a baseline that follows a certain philosophy. But in actuality, no. We come into the world based on karma, based on the energy that we have brought to this world stage from previous existences, and that includes the astral realm, where a lot of the codes are already have been established that set up our birth date, and that birth date that we have is significant to a code, and that code is significant to the intensity of what the third eye can see through the blanket of physicality.
So, you know, advising our listeners on opening the third eye with integrity and with accuracy, what are some of the things that you can say? I mean, in our work together, Neil, and my development of the third eye, it's been a process and it still is a continuing process. It takes time for many people to, and you know, it's constant work, constant development, to do it accurately. I mean, I think maybe people can speed the process if they're using dark forces, for instance, to activate or things like that, you know.
Well, time is a measurement. And our basic measurement of time is the day we're born and the day we die. We have this blanket, this corridor of time to develop ourselves. But development doesn't start when we are born, and it doesn't end when we die.
Right, because it's the continuum of the soul. Of course.
So the element of time in the third eye is not the question. It's the element of intensity, concentration, discipline. All of these things are what's important in terms of the nature and the development of the third eye. Some of our greatest third eyes are children who are 6 years old, as opposed to maybe someone who's 90 years old. It's not a measurement so much of time as development and discipline, I think, and heading in the right course.
Right, but if you're talking about a person who's 6 years old, there's going to be a natural activation that's already there, like probably upon birth. A six-year-old is going to have more natural ability than someone who's, you know, 45 or 60 starting out and trying to activate that energy. Those people maybe didn't have that inborn quality. And it's the same thing. I mean, intuition is not being psychic. You know, people can be intuitive all their lives, but it doesn't mean necessarily that their third eye is open and activated and functioning properly.
Well, no. And there is a certain limitation. Let's face it, a six-year-old is, you know, language, development of maturity.
Right,
and
the interpretation, the art of the interpretation is not going to be present, you know.
No, of course not. But what we've got, sometimes some of the divine factors of children who have spiritual or psychic gifts is pertinent to the age level of who they are, whether they're connecting and seeing ghosts and expressing it, or they profess to have a past life and they're saying things that are extraordinary. But in terms of the wisdom, you know, you're not going to go to a six-year-old for therapy unless you know.
Obviously.
So of course, there's certain concrete levels of interpretation in regard to how wise someone can really be, whether they have a gift or not. The gift of the psychic eye is that eye is able to move beyond the physical realm and to see things, to bring them back with validity, with valuable information, no matter what the reason is.
Yeah, because what is psychic information without that connection to higher energies? I mean, like you said, many people can be psychic, but if there's not a divine connection, then, you know, one to two-dimensional information that's being supplied to the recipient.
Right. And then we get to the level that someone's either wise or they're intuitive or they have insight. And those are great qualities too. They're all still very earthbound in their value, in their connection. They're still very earthbound, being intuitive, being wise, having insight. They're still earthbound attributes. When you get into something extraordinary, that's mystical, that can actually bring the future to the present moment, and at that present moment you say something, and then the future unfolds and it reveals itself to be true, and this is done over and over again, or when you connect specifically to somebody from the other side and you bring back information that is beyond the letter, you know, I'm picking up the letter C and the person was very jolly, you know, beyond those concepts that have generalizations to them that we all in the map of our brain trying to find some connection to and really believe we're talking to somebody from the other side. You got to get to more specific energies. And even then, there's testing involved in terms of how the interpreter can just be lucky, or there's just a good gift of gab and it just seems
right
to connect.
And there's cerebral insight that can be offered versus like celestial insight. You know, if you're dealing with an excellent psychologist, they're probably not using their third eye, but they can certainly advise an individual on their life path. So coupling a gift for giving insight with that psychic ability.
Yeah, I mean, when you get down to the logics of thought, to the logical thinking, and you try to interpret what level how someone's brain operates, you can easily analyze it, perhaps exactly where they're coming from, whether they're building off of a theory or they're going into something much higher in the aspects, even of psychology, where you went to different aspects of cosmic consciousness and things like that. And the parapsychologists who go beyond the earth and they conceptualize the human brain as a universal concept. Then you get more into the abstraction of energy and symbolisms and such things. But as we come down and narrow our energy down, it comes to one thing, that on the basic level of being a human being, we have to basically communicate. And that communication should be sound, direct, and purposeful, and hopefully accurate.
Okay, Neil, we've got to take some callers. 404 is our first. Everybody in the queue is getting reading. Please do keep your place in the line. We'll be getting to you shortly. Okay, 404, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. How are you? Who's this?
My name is Tamika. I'm calling from Atlanta.
Can you spell your name for us, please?
Tamikaa.
Okay, Tamika. And what's your birthday, Tamika?
11/26/1985.
Okay, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 20. 35/8. Is that what you got?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 35/8. Mm-hmm.
Okay, Tamika, what brings you to the show today?
Well, I have an interview on Monday. This will be my third interview with the same place. I just want to know if it's going to be looking good, or I just want to know what to expect.
Well, you know, you're 30 years old. Yeah, you're 30 years old. And Tamika, you're still working through a journey of karma, which is going to change drastically at the age of 35. So everything you're doing up to that point of the age of 35 is all going to be transitory anyways. It's nothing's going to last for too long. In the idea of where you're going now, your master number is 8. So, you know, you go on multiples of 8. That's going to be at 32. The next one's going to be at 32. 35, which is your karmic number, is not divisible by 8, but aside from all that, you're 30 years old and you're asking me about a job. Your previous job, did you have a job that lasted about 2.5 to 3 years at any point in your job history?
Sure. Yeah, I have.
And have you ever had a job where a certain level of communication was demanded? Meaning that you had to, a lot of times those are operators or people who have to really connect, answering services. Have you ever done anything, even in your earlier years, under such an
adjustment?
What'd she say?
No. I didn't hear her.
I said, no, I have not.
She has not.
Most of my jobs have been customer service and stuff like that, but never, like, over the phone, you know.
Tamika, are you on speakerphone?
No, I'm not.
It's just, if you could talk right into the receiver then, because it's like getting garbled somehow.
You hear me now?
Yeah. So let's go specifically. What kind of work are you talking about for this job interview?
This is a daycare center.
A daycare center. A daycare center. Oh, yeah. Well, let me tell you, I think you're going to get the job. You're dealing with daycare center. Are you talking about a hands-on daycare provider? Are you working specifically with children?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And have you had two previous jobs of this nature before?
Just one.
So this would be the second if you get it.
Yes.
Uh-huh. And how long did you have the other job for?
I was young. I was about 21. It only lasted about a year.
So you were 21 and it lasted about a year, and this is 9 years later. And did you go to school in the interim? Did you get an associate degree or anything?
I didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, you got a couple of things working against you, but aside from that, Tamika, I'm getting that you're going to get the job. Is this just being a daycare provider, like you're going to be supervising the children during their
That's
time?
That's correct, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think you're going to be getting it. You know, that's my vibe. I mean, I might be wrong, but this is what we do. So I'm feeling you're going to be getting the job. Is the job location within 15 miles of your residence?
It's actually closer than that.
Yeah, within 15 miles.
Within.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
No, not 15 miles, within 15 miles. So you could drive there in 7-8 minutes?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I think you're going to get it. I think you're going to get the work. You know, that's what I think. Yeah, that was your question, and that's my response. My main concern, though, you know, this is probably a minimum paying job, and I'm more concerned about your deeper future. Do you intend to go back to school?
Yes, actually, I do. I do.
Yeah, Tamika, go back to school, because if you don't, you're going to be struggling through the waters of employment at basically a minimum wage or a little bit better. And I think you can do better than that. So you're telling me you want to go back. Make sure you make that happen. Do you want a career in child care or social work or what?
No, I want to start my own business.
What kind of business?
Like making body butters and essential oils and things of that nature, but I don't know.
You don't need to go to school for that, but yeah, I don't know. You know, you don't really need to go to school for that unless you want to really get into the business degree aspect of it.
Right.
But that's fair enough. Why do you want to go back to school?
So I can learn how, like, to properly run my business, and because I don't want to fail at it.
Okay, well.
I don't want to jump, yes.
You know, if you want to get a small business, how far are you beyond high school and school? I mean, what have you taken?
I haven't, just high school, I haven't done anything after that.
Well, at least go back to college or something, online, something, get some more knowledge about some business aspect. You need a better business background, and that's exactly
right.
What we're both agreeing on. And then, you know.
I don't know why this occurs. I'm going to reload the page. Okay. Can you hear us?
Hello?
Hi, can you hear us?
Yes, I can hear you now.
Okay. Okay. So your master number is 8, Neil.
Your master number is 8, and that's actualized. That's a good number for business and
management.
For money. You have it in your year. The fact is it's broken up in your day as a 2-6. So that's why you still have this journey of actualizing yourself. But as you approach 35, it's going to get very luck. You're going to have a very successful life in terms of how you structure it. And so, you know, okay. That 5 years is going to be quick. So go back, get back in school and get your degree in business or some associate degree of something.
Right. And she, I mean, making soaps and lotions and essential oils, she probably should get some.
Yeah,
training in that field as well. Not as an esthetician. I don't know.
There's a word for it. Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay. All right, Tamika. Well, thank you for your call.
You have a lovely day.
You too. And Tamika can follow us right here on Blog Talk Radio and join us on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. Okay, 865 and then 251. 865, this is Cassandra. Hi, Cassandra.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
I'm doing great.
122986.
Yes, I'm ma'am.
38112. So, what's going on?
Well, I mean, I messaged you about the horse energy thing, about how the 40 horses got loose onto the parking here in Pigeon Forge, and then also with the movie that I watched later that evening with my fiance, who had absolutely no idea of the reading that I received.
Right. Can I just back up for those that are listening? So what happened on the show that Cassandra last called on is that Neil said that horses would be significant to her, and to start looking at literature involving horses. And then Cassandra sent me an email and said, well, what kind of literature should I look at? I responded and I said, well, Pegasus is a start. We'll send some more information later. But in that email, she had also said there were horses that had run loose in her town that morning. So that was Neil picking up on that energy. Then later that night, what occurred was Cassandra's boyfriend did run a movie. Pegasus was actually on the screen. And then in the movie, there was something regarding Jesus and a horse.
Yeah, Jesus, the little boy who, it's actually based on a true story. The little boy talked about when he visited heaven that Jesus had a horse of many colors.
So everything kind of tied into that reading and the emails that we exchanged. So very interesting. Very interesting.
Yes. A lot of synchronicities.
What did you say that cut out?
I said a lot of synchronicities, for sure.
Definitely. Did you have a specific question today, Cassandra?
I do. I just wanted to go ahead and touch on the fact that I did a little reading online that was talking about how I have the soul urge number of 11. So I just wanted to let you guys know that.
I'm going to stop you right there. The numerology that Neil and I are ascribed to is actually not, I don't know what a soul urge number is. I mean, I've read about it, but that's not, you know, it's a different formula, essentially. How did you come up with that number, by the way?
It was through a Facebook group that was providing, like, different numerology readings or whatnot, but basically it was talking about the soul urge was like your main desires in life or whatever, but it was supposed to have something to do with basically being very spiritual, very active in trying to find your life purpose as far as spirituality goes and whatnot.
Right. But what was the calculation? Like, how did they come up with the 11? I mean, she's a 38-11 too, is that right? But
I believe they used your entire birth name.
Birth name.
Yes, your entire first, middle, and last birth name.
Okay. I mean, because the fact is that actually matches your master number before reduction, but and also the day, but interesting.
I wanted to just let you guys know that I did do a little bit of reading, and I found out that Pegasus is an energy in the Reiki healing I haven't really read too much into it, but it is an energy to do with Reiki, which is something that I'm wanting to get into as far as spiritual healing and whatnot. And I guess what my specific question would be is just, is there any specific path? Is there anything that I can do to kind of just kind of help the process along? I feel like it's definitely a journey that I'm going to have to go on and be patient and just kind of take it step by step. But yeah.
Okay. Well.
Well, yeah, it is a Pegasus is an element there, Ricky. What you've got to do in terms of breath is. Pegasus is related to winged breath. Winged breath has to do with the breath of your consciousness and your actual physical breath incorporated into your fifth chakra. That's your throat chakra. And winged conversation means that you're taking your breath and moving it into your throat chakra. That chakra is regarded in terms of the winged breath, the Pegasus consciousness, which is winged here, in this case, winged conversation. Winged conversation is your link to the astral realm. It's how you actually communicate with the astral realm through breath. And when you communicate to the astral realm through breath, you're not necessarily using your vocal cords as much as you're using more of a higher level of communication that doesn't require actual language when you're making that initial link to the astral realm. Mm-hmm. That involves a consciousness, and that consciousness is fueled by the breath of consciousness, which is that your very breath is connected to your thoughts. And if your thoughts are on high energy, and angelic energy, on mysticism, on the imagination, on the wonder of existence, then that goes into that area of your throat whereby when you do speak, your words are inspired. So that's where the aspect of that comes from, Cassandra. And so in your journey, you're obviously linked in some mystical way to the astral realm. And horses hold a great symbolism, mythology, a direct link to heavenly spheres. And the winged horse is more like, I mean, that's very synonymous with a lot of even biblical passages. So I think in your regard, I'm not sure what your question is, unless you were talking about the incorporation of Pegasus or the winged horse element in the form of communication.
I think she's asking how to, which direction she should move in on her spiritual path and what she can do to enhance and find her calling.
The science of breath. The science of breath is the science of how we breathe in relation to our rhythmic breathing that's just done in and out. The science of breath is the elevation of how we connect our breath to consciousness, what we're visualizing. A lot of the yogis will say, clear your mind when you breathe, because the absolute essence of existence is that we are without the body, that we have no material gain here, that we're spiritual energies connected solely to the light. I mean, that's in the higher element of absolute connection to cosmic energy. And that light source can be considered God, if you will. But the science of breath is that we become so aware of our breath that we travel through the aspect of what it's doing to our body, how it connects to our body, how it connects to our chakras, how it connects the oxygen in all of our limbs and organs. And then from there, you go into the higher astral realm. How does it connect with your aura? How does it connect with your halo? How does it connect with your astral body? How does it connect with your astral flight? How does breath take you beyond the physicality into the spiritual realm of communication? Now that breath is expanded upon, and it becomes the breath of consciousness, which is something that you can't really kill, because the consciousness of the soul is something that will go on forever. So I don't know. I mean, you know, you have to study the science of breath is the best metaphor, but don't get me wrong, it's just not medically induced. It's just
right.
not a biological conception. It's a spiritual conception of breath.
Well, I will definitely do my best to find some literature on that, and I thank you very much. It definitely resonates, and I will be listening.
Okay. Cassandra, thanks for your call.
Thank you.
Well, our 251 dropped. Another strange day. Wednesday seemed to be really slow, Neil.
Really slow. So we can talk a little bit.
We can talk a little bit.
For about 5 minutes, see if anybody joins us.
And if not, we'll stop early.
So we were talking about the third eye. And
right. And
to infuse that third eye with what? Either
breath.
Breath.
Which is right on topic here with Cassandra.
But we were talking about the third eye in terms of psychicness.
And in terms of connecting to
spirit. Because the psychicness is a whole different, they're two really different things. They're kind of connected, but they're elevated. Spirituality is an elevated form of psychic energy. And psychic energy is still what regarded to the ego. You can be psychic and be very egotistical. Can you be spiritual?
Like you. No, I'm just kidding. I'm teasing.
Well, maybe. But,
no.
You can also be spiritual, but spirituality is sort of beyond, transcends the ego. Because you can't, there's not really an ego in spirituality. There's a oneness. So everything's of one energy. Everything's circular and everything's of one energy. And there is not a division of ego is created by division of thought.
Right, and there's no ego in the spirit realm. There is ego on the earth, and the earth it holds duality, and that's why we have the element of ego on the planet and not in the higher realm.
There can be, I mean, the spirit can have an individual nature, but it's conceptualized as one. There's a oneness. So there isn't a dialogue regarding the ego. You don't express yourself on an egotistical basis when you're dealing with spirit. When you're dealing with psychic energy, you'll use a lot of eyes. I see this. I see this. I'm hearing this. The ego becomes very important to the element of that realm. It's kind of scary to get to the idea of spirit because you have to let go of your ego without feeling like you're losing your identity. So to have the spiritual eye, as opposed to the what karmic eye or the psychic eye, you have to understand that you're letting go of your I-ness.
The letter I, not the E-Y-E. Yeah.
But yet you still have identity. You still have a connection to the absolute source. And that connection feeds you with a great immensity of purpose and delight because you're connecting to the highest source of creation. And what better thing than that? But you're not losing anything by losing your ego. So sometimes people who are psychics, they have a struggle with the ego because the higher they go in their conceptualization of existence, the more they tend to lose their bearing and they have to bring it back down to an ego level. But that's why some of the greatest psychics, seers, we don't even talk to. They're on some mountain somewhere contemplating God. There's no need for communication in that regard. But
they're not using their psychic eye or their spiritual eye to even connect with people or help them with their earthly pursuits. They're in like a monk state or, meditating, isolating, which I don't know if there's problems with that too, but.
Well, they say, but, St. John of Patmos, he didn't write his book with a big audience.
Right. He was isolated. But I mean, then it gets to you have to consider, what isolating oneself. Yes, there's an element of people who are going to leave the planet that are, that often have solitary aspects to their personality, but also, you know, being of service on the planet is important too if you want to get off the planet.
Well, so, you know, it comes down to the important journey of solitude. Christ was in great solitude when he made some of his greatest revelation. When he spoke to God, he went into what was called the wilderness.
Right, the 40 days and 40 nights.
Yeah.
Desert, et cetera, which you equate to the astral realm rather than actually in the desert.
I mean, there can be a physical location. You can go into isolation, so to speak. But then going into isolation, you just don't, I'm going to go talk to God, so I'll go to the desert, be by myself, and just sit around. There's more to it than that. You have to get to a certain level of consciousness in order to, once you get to that isolated or that solitude position, that now you connect to a higher source. So it means the opening up of the mind, the opening up of the spirit, so that the spirit is not blocked by the body and the body is not blocked by the earth. And so you kind of remove yourself and you get into the generalization that you're in the wilderness. But that wilderness is also the frontier, the cosmic frontier, the frontier where we actually have our true roots. Not our earthly roots, but our spiritual roots. And therein we can reconnect to the history of where our soul has been, what our soul is connected to, and the source of our first breath with God. So in that position, then we're fed with information that we can perhaps then redeliver back to the planet once we kind of come down from that astral realm.
Okay, Neil. Are we ready to wrap up here?
Yeah.
Not to cut this short, but it seems like we're not going to get any more callers, and I don't know.
We'll call it an hour.
Okay, a 45-minute hour. It's like psychologist. It's actually a 50, what is it, a 50-minute hour?
50 minutes.
Or a lawyer, 50 minutes.
A lawyer is, I think, 25.
10. Okay, we're back on the air on Friday at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, everyone.